Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome back to Fourth Down Focus, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network. I am Dan Lundy, host of the podcast and founder of Fourth Down University. The NFL divisional round concluded last night, and I'd like to share with the audience, if they weren't aware, that all four games, special teams play a major role. It was a catalyst. It resulted in wins. I'm very happy for that. It also almost lost a few games, and arguably did lose a few games. So we're going to talk about that a little bit today, I'm sure. With a new website, BetOnline is now your number one spot for football action this fall. It continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website betonline.ag or use your phone to sign up today to receive your 100% welcome bonus. That is double your initial deposit just for signing up. And don't forget to use promo code NFL100. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. Episode 64 of the podcast welcomes coach PJ Gibbs, East Lee County head coach, author, and national team coach for Team USA Football. Coach, it is an honor to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Coach, thank you for having me. I'm excited. I'm doing well. We're, surviving this Florida winter down here. You know, I think it was like 45 when we woke up this morning. And I'm doing great. Looking forward to getting ready to roll for spring practice and kind of get our spring ball visit set up for the coaching staff.
I'm excited to share your story a little bit. I found you on social media and your Twitter presence is enlightening in a lot of ways. And we'll touch on the recruiting and a little bit, and because that's kind of your niche in addition to coaching, of course, on defense. But I think that you are truly an advocate for these young men on your campus and just around you in the Florida area. So having coached for, I guess, since 2001, I was reading, could you share a brief history of your coaching experiences these last 20 years?
Sure. Yeah. I started coaching at my alma mater from Manasquan, New Jersey, which is smack dab in the middle of the state, right on the beach, a little bit north of what everybody remembers as the Jersey Shore. I used to get that all the time. I'm like, no, we're not from there. That's south of us. Kind of cut my teeth there. Was an assistant linebacker coach for my linebacker coach. Manasquan's a small town. Manasquan's like a Norman Rockwell painting, man. It's like the Varsity Blues deal. Like, you know, if you played high school football there, then you went back to coach, and the guys that coached me, I coached with, and I was there for 5 years, and we coached a bunch of great kids, won some championships there. And then 2006, I wanted to kind of branch out a little bit. I wanted to be a coordinator. So I was hired by, I played and coached for a Hall of Fame coach in Manasquan and Vic Cabu. And then 2006, I worked for another Hall of Fame, New Jersey coach, Joe Martucci at Mattawan, was there for 3 years. Defensively, we went from 32nd out of 36 my first year to 9th out of 36 my second year. Then I went back home in 2009. My defensive coordinator, Pete Cahill, took over for Coach Cabu, who had passed away in 2007, and asked me to come back. So I was the defensive line coach for 2 years and then became the defensive coordinator for Jay Price, who was my linebacker coach at Manasquan. So I was there from then and then until about 2015. And then wife and I, we got married in 2009, had our daughter and son about a year and a half apart in New Jersey, taxes. And, you know, we were kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. And my brother-in-law, who actually just took a job at Washington State, was with Coach Pinkel at Missouri at the time as a defensive analyst. And he was recruiting the West Coast of Florida. So, you know, we see each other on holidays and stuff. And he's like, hey, man, listen, I don't know if you're looking to move, but Collier County is looking for coaches and teachers, and New Jersey's teaching certificate has reciprocity in 49 states. So I put my resume out, interviewed at four places, got offered two jobs and took one at Gulf Coast High School, and went back to my in-laws' house in Estero, Florida, and said, hey, listen to my wife, are you ready to do this? Because we're going to need to get stuff rolling. And we went back to New Jersey, sold our house in 10 days. And I can tell you, July 1st, at 1:10 a.m., we pulled out of my mom's driveway in Manasquan with a 3 and a 1.5-year-old and a loaded Honda CRV. And we made it to Jacksonville in the first day and then got down to Naples and was there for 3 years, won the first district championship in the history of the school. Then was recruited to go to Palmetto Ridge High School and was there for 3 years. And my last year there in 2020, we had the number one defense in Southwest Florida giving up 6.9 points per game, and parlayed that into I always wanted to be a head coach. Since I've been 14 years old, I always wanted to be a head football coach. And I can remember sitting in Mr. Dowd's history class in at Manasquan High School as a freshman, wanting to be like my head coach, Vic Caboo. And had East Lee hired me in March, and we did some really good things this year. You know, we walked into a program that was 0-27, giving up 61 points a game. And this year we had the most wins in 5 years in the school's history. Went from giving up 61 points a game to 25 points a game, and had a first shutout in 6 years. And I'm proud to say this year we'll have, they haven't had a college signee for football since 2012. This year we'll have 8 signed. So I'm very proud of the work that the coaching staff has done. And it wouldn't be there, you know, if the kids didn't buy into what we were doing when we first came in.
I have winners on this show, and you're a winner. And what I mean by that is, like, you lead people, and you lead young men on the football field and off of it as well. And that's just, it's amazing to hear, because I see so many good football coaches who don't go the extra mile off the field for their kids. They almost feel that it's an obligation that, you know, yep. and it should be part, it should really be a passion. I see you, and I can tell that it's something that you thoroughly enjoy, because it's a lot of relationship building, right? You have to know how to deal with people, and you have to deal with a wide variety of people, because it's a regional sport. And this is a big country. So I commend you for your efforts. And, you know, in addition to coaching football, you know, you're also an author. You write on the subject, defense. Could you elaborate a little more on this? Perhaps what writing's taught you about yourself, both as a coach and a person?
Well, the reason why I did it first is I have ADD, and it was COVID, and we were all locked in the house, right? go around our neighborhood, and, you know, because nobody really knew what the deal was, you know, when this thing first hit. And so I said to my wife, I was like, you know, I'm going to sit down and try to write a book. And I leaned pretty heavy on two guys that I worked with at USA Football, John Weaver, who's a wideout coach at in Mississippi, and Sean Liotta, who's a head coach in PA. They had self-published, and I just kind of like, how did you guys do it? And they, you know, turned me on to Amazon, you know, do the self-publishing thing. And so the first book I wrote, I just kind of wanted to tell my story, like how I learned football and the defenses that I've learned through Manasquan, through Coach Don Brown, who did the forward for both my books. Him and I have a very, very tight relationship. And, from going to there to the Iowa State 3 high safety stuff, which we kind of live in now. We're very multiple at that. And I'm actually going to be putting a defensive system out with Coach Rick Stewart in All Access Coaching, the fast and physical defense. It's going to be coming out in the middle, hopefully by the mid-March, once I get everything rolling for coaches to get. And, in the second book, you know, both books did well on Amazon, but like, everybody's like, well, coach, your book was number one for like 6 weeks. I'm like, yeah, well, everybody's sitting home, you know, they want to read, you know, they want to do something. So I don't think it was anything like, you know, magical. You know, I think everyone was just bored, and they wanted to get their clinic fix in around that time, right? So, but, you know, what it kind of taught me is, coach, you do with the podcast, you know, stuff we do, like you put yourself out there. I mean, you open yourself up to criticism and things like that, because, you know, they don't like what you're doing. They like what you're doing, but they want to talk behind your back and, you know, whatever. But I think it kind of, it kind of shows you, you know, what the coaching community is about, because I had so many guys reach out to me like, coach, you know, can we Zoom and can we do this? And listen, at the end of the day, I mean, I'm here because of football. Like, you know, we moved to Florida, you know, I love teaching history. I was a history major in college, you know, but football got us to Florida out of New Jersey. And I try to give back to the game as much as possible, because without the game, you know, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you and having had as many great experiences with the people that I've had and helping the kids that I've had. So I think that's kind of the thing that with the books, it kind of connected me with a lot of people throughout the country to kind of help them out.
I think it's awesome. You know, it's definitely a process, and I've written a lot. I've never publicly published any of my writing, but, you know, one day I think I could sift through and organize it properly and actually really come up with something neat. And I commend you for that too. My grandmother was an author. Her mother was an author. So it's kind of in our blood. I was an English minor. I took English as a minor because I've always been a nerd with literature and stuff. So I think it's neat. I'll talk to you more off air about the writing process, because it fascinates me. I love talking to authors. I want to also talk. I have some friends that are in this Team USA football. Mark Beach, you might know, and Nick Gatto.
Nick Gatto's my dude, man. Nick, funny story. Nick Gatto's family and I and our family, like Gibbs family, he's related to the Herman family in Manasquan.
Okay.
So Nick and I have that connection. You know, he's out in Texas, but anytime we did a USA football event, we take a picture and tag them in the Facebook post, like, look who I found. You know, so it's in Mark Beach. Mark is one of the most genuine human beings you'll ever meet in your life, man. What a great, not just a great coach, X's and O's, but just a great dude to be around. Like, he's a guy that you just want, you want to have him come over your house every weekend just to hang out.
He took me under his wing. This is unexpected, but I didn't know. I wasn't sure how well you knew either, but Mark was my first coach really in high school.
Okay.
He was a DB guy. Of course, the side of the ball he coaches, and he switched, I guess he was an OC in South Georgia, but long story short, I had no kicking coach. This is high school football. And he saw like the ability I had, I guess, and was like, I think you could definitely do this, you know? So he would show me a lot of attention. You know, he'd involve me in practice. He'd do situational things, which in 1999 and 1998, this doesn't happen, you know? But I was getting game like experiences. And I think that had a huge impact on my career and my preparation. But back to the USA football, because I think a lot of people were probably like, what are they talking about? Could you share what USA football is, maybe the highlights working with this organization? And what is your role, as your title is master trainer? Could you explain that as well?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, USA football, it really advocates for the safety of the sport. Twofold. One, from the tackling, the heads up program, that's kind of expanded into some different like coaching perspective things, and kind of coaches helping coaches, and then the other part is the national team program, and I've been involved with that since 2008 when we did regional camps. When I was living in New Jersey, I would do New Jersey and Maryland, and it's really, to see how much it's grown, to be honest with you, since 2008 is incredible. And then they started this International Bowl, I believe in 2010, 2011. So guys like Tyrann Mathieu, Jameis Winston, Chase Young, like all these guys have played in it. I was asked, my first International Bowl was 2016. I was asked to be the U15 DB coach. And it's kind of funny because, a lot of these kids are playing college ball today. So like Preston Stone, who's the starting quarterback at SMU, was our quarterback. Ron Sullivan, who's a starting wideout at Purdue, was one of our wideouts. Then 2017, because it's international, so you're playing teams that are involved in the IFAF, the International Federation of American Football. So they asked me to be the DB coach for the Japanese team. So it was like, it's me and a bunch of these guys from Texas that are coaching this team. And it's like Google Translate to the max. Like, the coaches didn't speak English. Players, so I'm like, we're playing Ripley's match. So my phone, blah, 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 and then I'd hit play, and the phone would say whatever I was saying, and the kids would shake their head. And then I was a head coach for the last 3 years. So 2018, 2019, I was a head coach for U17 select team for the American team. And then in 2020, Coach Aaron Ingram, who was the national team manager, he was head of the coach selection, calls me and says, hey, listen, the Japanese team wants a head coach. And he's like, I think you'd be great for it. And you get to pick your staff. So I'm like, sweet. I'm like, I appreciate the opportunity. And, we did some research on the coaching staff for the U17 national. Now U17 national, these are the dudes, like the two quarterbacks on this national team that we played. One of them is Chris Parson, who's going to Florida State. The other one is Jake Strong, who's just committed to Texas Tech. So we find out who their OC is, and they're a heavy RPO guy. So I call Tyson Vett from Iowa State, and I'm like, listen, I need everything you have for three high safety that I can look at and install. So in 5 days, we install the base three high safety defense with the Japanese team. We win 28-20 in AT&T Stadium against the U17 national team. So that was the last International Bowl I did, because they didn't have it last year because of, because of COVID. But it's a phenomenal organization, a great experience. Fortunate enough to coach, and for my wife and kids to be able to watch me on TV coaching Cowboy Stadium, that's been really cool. And again, my grandfather was a World War II veteran. I had uncles that fought in Vietnam. So to represent United States of America, and be able to do it on a great stage like AT&T is phenomenal. And then the master trainer stuff, I started that in 2015 as well. So basically what we do is we go in and we, in the beginning part of it, what we did was we went around the country and talked to youth coaches about, heat acclimatization, practice planning, safe tackling. We had this thing called rookie tackle, which was a 6-, 7-, and 8-man football for youth, as opposed to them playing on a full high school field. And then we transitioned into what the tackling system we use, which is Andy Ryland and Richie Gray, called the Five Fights. And Richie Gray is a tackling analyst for the Miami Dolphins. He's also a world championship rugby coach. He trains the New Zealand Blacks in rugby. I mean, Richie is he's a dude. So that's kind of like what we do now. And then what we've incorporated is like this, this like coaches coaching coaches deal, where we kind of learn how to, more like along the lines of, mental strength and kind of helping people out. And so we'll take courses on that. We're supposed to go to Indianapolis in March for training for that. We usually get together once a year in person for that. So, and then they just basically say, hey, listen, you're in Florida, you're going to do this, and this. And then the NFL will have us, like we worked the Pro Bowl 1 year, practice, and just did a tackling deal. So it's a really neat, it's been a really neat experience. I can't say enough good things about it.
Awesome. And believe it or not, that is something you do supplementary. I do want to switch it now to what you do on a daily basis. I coached high school football for a number of years, and I love talking to high school coaches about the experience. As mentioned, you are the head coach, and you're also the recruiting coordinator for East Lee County High School in Naples, Florida, which is Southwest Florida, for all you people that are out of state. You're way down there. You're about 5 hours from me. I'm in Daytona. I'm closer to Georgia. But I'd like you to share a little more about the program you took over, the coaches you've surrounded yourself with, and what it's taken to rebuild this program. I read an article recently, and this is not a program that has won 4 or 5 state titles in a row. This is definitely a challenge, I imagine. I'd love to talk to you about that a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I was hired in March, and again, I did my research on the job. I knew, applying for it and interviewing, I knew what had been done in the past. Like I said, you're talking about a team that hadn't won a game in 3 years, given up over 60 points a game on average, no weight room culture, no culture in general, really, ineligibility, grade issues. And, I did my research on a lot of guys in the area, and I talked to some of my friends, back home. I said, hey, listen, you got, and it's funny because anytime you talk to a buddy in a cold weather state, it's like, hey, listen, if you ever get a head job, I'm in, I'm coming. Well, get a head job, I make the phone call, and they're like, oh, I don't know if I can move. I was like, dude, 6 months ago, you were in, you were coming, right? So it's like, I think for a lot of guys, it's like, oh my God, like I really may have to sell my house, or I have to tell my wife that we're moving, and I don't know if she's going to want to move. So I found some great guys. Brent Burnside, who was a former head coach at Moorhaven. He played arena ball. He was my defensive coordinator, and just a great mentor of young men. Very even keel. Obviously, the head coach experience really helped me, because he had a few years experience, and now I'm transitioning from a coordinator to a head coach. And he was a great hire. I hired Bob Masseri, 72-year-old Marine from Vietnam, Vietnam vet. Actually was my college, funny story. Bob coached at a high school that I played against in high school. And then when I signed to go play at St. Peter's College in Jersey City, which was an FCS program, Bob ended up being my linebacker coach, my freshman and sophomore year. So we've had a connection since about 1995, I would say. Guys like Herbins Paul, who's a Mockley High School graduate, played at Florida State, ended up being my OC. High energy dude, the kids love him. The whole thing with us was about teaching kids accountability, because, it was like, well, I remember my second week, and I had kids being like, coach, I'm going to basketball. I go, no, you're not. It's spring football, and you're not going to basketball Tuesdays and Thursdays. I mean, you can go to basketball, but don't bother coming back out for football. And they had never heard that before. Some of them were kind of like, what do you mean I can't go to basketball? Well, I mean, you can, but you're just not going to come back out for football. It's just how it's going to be. Basketball season is in the wintertime. you know, not in the spring. If you're going to be a football player, you're going to play football. And I encourage multi-sport athletes. Like I tell them, like right now we have a bunch of kids playing basketball, a bunch of kids wrestling. And now we have the spring weightlifting season coming. And I told my kids, if you're not running track, you're going to do weightlifting. You know, we want our kids involved. We had a bunch of guys in the building. I interviewed two guys in the building that had been there, and guys that were good hearted men, like guys that were generally in it, Preston Towns and Marcus Simmons, that were generally in it for the kids. And that's why I kept them on staff, because like when I met them and I interviewed them, I'm from New Jersey. I can do a few things well. And one of them, I can read people like a book. And within the first 30 seconds of meeting these guys, I knew they were in it for the right reason. So I, you know, I hired them. And so they've been an integral part of, you know, turning around. And like when I hired them, I said, listen, you know, the buck stops with me. I mean, I'm the head coach. I'm going to make the decision, but we're all spokes in a wheel. I said, at the end of the day, like I have to answer the newspapers. I have to answer admin, but you know, everybody's equal. Nobody's bigger than anybody else. Certainly nobody's bigger than the program. So, you know, I'm not going to say it was all sunshine and rainbows, you know, but, you know, we all worked hard. Summer, we had anywhere between 30 to 40 kids there Monday through Thursday when we conditioned. We took them to Kaiser for 7-on-7. I mean, some of these kids had never been out of the West Coast of Florida. You know, now we got them on the bus going to the East Coast for the first time and competing against East Coast teams. And like, listen, guys, if you want to play at an elite level, we're going to play elite competition and we're going to compete. And I don't care about the score. Yeah, we want to win, but are you competing every snap? Like you're not just giving up on a play because you got beat, right? It was breaking that mold of that mentality of just, well, hey, I'm just going to, you know, just give up, or, you know, oh, they're already up by 7. So, you know, and we fought that all through the spring. It was the mentality of, well, you know, our spring game, right? We were down, I think 31-7 going into halftime. And I challenged them. I said, listen, we can just get on the bus and you can, we could save everybody. Or you can do the opposite of what you've done for the last, and I'm specifically talking to the senior class. You can do the opposite of what you've been doing for the last 3 years and just laying down, and you can freaking let's get moving. You know, let's send a message to our fall schedule on how we're going to finish. That's what we need to do. We need to learn how to finish. And we held them to 3 points in the second half. So, I mean, it's been a process, man. It's been a process, and I can't thank my guys enough. They're just, you know, I told you I'm hiring you for a reason, and I can't thank them enough. They've done a great job.
You're doing a good job. I appreciate what you said. My takeaway, what I heard more than anything just then, was accountability. I think that I don't want to name names, but it happened yesterday in really, really important football games where you could tell some guys in the field wanted to place blame everywhere else but themselves. And it was cancerous. It was very toxic. And it became the catalyst for the worst in the game. You know, people lost yesterday because of a lack of accountability at the highest of levels on each team. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to really, again, I think you probably know what I'm talking about at this point, but some faces of teams could get a little stronger in that department. Do your job. And
I agree.
And it's okay. Right. It's okay. I think the beginning of change is assuming that I'm not perfect. In fact, I should always try and refine myself. Right. If I'm married to my process and I think it's perfect,
yep,
that's when I become stagnant. And that's when others say, well, I'm not going to stay the same. I'm going to change.
Yep.
And I really appreciate what you said. Just be accountable. I think it starts there. And this really leads into my last question for you. And, you know, as we record, I think it's January 24, 2022, and we're coming up on a big day in high school football, which is National Signing Day. And weirdly enough, this is the second in as many as like 2 or 3 months. There's been two, right? You are a guru, in my opinion, with recruiting relative to most, especially at the high school level. And I think I'm going to ask you like a hypothetical here is, what if I am a 2022 senior? I did everything for you. In your opinion, I'm an FCS, maybe a Division II talent. And I'm a high academic performer. I've dotted my I's and crossed my T's. What do you tell a guy like me who comes into your office tomorrow and says, Coach, I have nothing? Can you please enlighten these people listening right now that this is not over for a while, you know, after signing day?
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, when I spoke at the AFCA, I spoke about recruiting today's high school athlete. And, you know, kind of what I take the parents through a journey when we hold our parent meeting and you know, talking to you as that 22 kid. Is okay. Yeah. You have a great GPA. You were a second team all conference player. Okay. But here's the deal is the transfer portal right now is crushing high school recruiting. Absolutely crushing it. So it's right. Just because you have nothing right now doesn't mean anything. All right. We have your social media edits. You right now with your grades, that's not going to be the issue. Do you have your fastest fill out? Do you have your NC2A clearinghouse ID? Do you have your NAIA eligibility ID? And here's the deal. If you get a phone call tomorrow from a D2 school that offers you, jump on it. Because too many times these kids, and I think a lot of it is the parents, to be honest with you, it's D1 or bust mentality. And the goal, at the end of the day, the goal is the number zero, is what school are you loved up by? Who wants you? Not where you want to go. Who wants you, right? And what can they give you to get you closest to that number zero? And if you're a high academic kid and you have the tape and you have the talent, they will find ways to get you there. And then also too is, if that's the place you want to go, you better make sure you get your butt up there, because the last thing we want in our program is for you not to go up there for a week and come home. And now that coach is going to go, I ain't ever going there again. Because now what you've done is for the next two or three recruiting cycles is that you've messed it up for the guys that are coming behind you. So I think honesty, first and foremost, the kids and parents need to be educated, because look, coach, it's Twitter and Instagram. They're seeing all these guys. And I just posted something today. I don't know if you saw it about hard work's undefeated. Cooper Kupp, 0 stars, right? Aaron Donald, 2 stars. Travis Kelce, 2 stars. Tyreek Hill, 0 stars. Stars don't mean anything to companies. It means this, it's money.
Amen.
But we get enamored with it because, oh, I have a 3 or a 4 star. Yeah, but listen, at the end of the day, and this is kind of how I end my meeting. For your son, football is going to end at some point. Does he have his degree? What is he going to do? I've coached one NFL kid in 23 years of coaching. I've had one kid make it to the NFL. Kid's name is Neil Sterling, played for us at Manasquan High School, was a 7th round pick of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Played for the Jaguars, the Chiefs, and the Jets. 3 contracts, retired at 28, now owns his own business because he got a business degree from Monmouth University.
Nice.
Good. Right? So you're not going to be Tom Brady. You're not going to be playing until you're 45 years old. You know. And listen, if you are, God bless you. And you can come back and say, Coach, you were wrong. I told you I was going to play until I'm 45. And I'll eat it. I will. But you're at some point, football for you is going to end. What have we prepared you to do? Because again, at the end of the day, our job is not football. It's life. It's teaching you how to be a better husband, a better father. All right. How to hold people accountable and also to be disciplined. Because, you know, I tell our guys, like, we want to become the mountain and then figure out how to stay on top of the mountain and not fall from the mountain. Right? Adversity. How do we react to it? Are we going to put our head in the sand? Are we going to point fingers? Are we going to start blaming everybody else? No. So I always put that man in the glass thing up. Who do you see in the morning? It's you. You have to impress that person, work that person every day. Do not disappoint that person, because you're going to be responsible for other people's lives when you become a husband and a father. And hopefully we can give them the tools in our program from 10 years from now to be successful.
I'm thankful for coaches like you. They're few and far between. My purpose lately on this show is to try to get as many of my guests to voice this, that, you know, there's enough to go around. But I love what you said. It's not always the sexiest school. And if the sexy school is your number one choice, but there's no reciprocation, they have zero feelings for you. It's not just going to all of a sudden happen now. In fact, you would have probably known 2 years ago if there was an interest. All right, Coach, I really appreciate you. And I'm going to ask you, like I always do, if you could please share a few ways with the audience that they could reach you.
Sure. The Twitter is easy. It's at Coach PJ Gibbs. Email is pgibbs8424@gmail.com. So if they want to drop me an email or DM me on Twitter, I'm more than happy, because, Coach, like I said before, I'm here because of football and I want to get back to the game and help people.
Amen. And I'm grateful for the information. I'm actually going to follow up with you about some of the NAIA and D2 paperwork, because I think it's important to go ahead and get these things rolling, because there's going to be a lot of opportunities at those levels. And I think kids, you know, oftentimes wait till after the fact, and then it slows the process down. So thank you for the little details like that. It means a lot to everyone at Fourth Down Focus that you were able to share information that can and will benefit performance, both on and off the field. Please give us a 5-star rating and review, subscribe to the show, and share it with a friend. If you have questions, suggestions for future topics or guests, or if you have feedback for me, you can reach me several ways. My website is fourthdownu.com. On Instagram and Twitter, my handle is @fourthdownu. And on Facebook and LinkedIn, you can find me by simply searching Dan Lundy, L-U-N-D-Y. Thanks again for joining us at Fourth Down Focus, presented by Bet Online. We'll see you next week with an exciting new guest. And I hope 2022 is treating each of you well. And remember, in all things, give thanks.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.